Hello and welcome to Module 1 of this four-part audio series, Healing Your Relationships Through Love. I am Dr. Erica Goodstone, a healing through love expert, helping men and women heal their bodies, their relationships, and their lives through love. I am so happy to have this opportunity to share so much of what I have learned about creating love. The focus of today's message is healing your relationship to yourself. Let me begin with a huge welcome. Whether you realize it or not, by taking this class about healing your relationship to yourself, you have taken a giant step toward creating the love you truly want in your life. The majority of people actually believe that relationships are all about the other person. But most of us still want to believe that the success of our relationships is caused by who we choose as a partner, how that person looks and behaves, what this other person does to help me look and feel good. So many of us don't want to believe that perhaps, just perhaps, our own thoughts, attitudes, and actions can actually affect and influence the success of our relationships. And most of us don't want to believe that we can and do affect and influence the thoughts, attitudes, and behaviors of our most intimate partners. What makes me uniquely qualified to talk about healing your relationship to yourself is that I've made it my life's work and focus to learn how to love and accept myself first for the unique and special person that I am. My dream has been to study and understand love and healing to such an extent that I become a reservoir of knowledge for others. As a former professor of health and physical education, I used to believe no pain, no gain, not only for building muscle strength and endurance, but also for creating love. I thought that being athletic meant always being in pain. I also thought that love was full of pain. And guess what? My belief actualized. My body was often in pain, and my relationships almost always turned out painful. The physical pains in my body led me to discover a vast array of body therapy treatments. I received sessions from chiropractors, massage therapists, craniosacral therapists, shiatsu practitioners, Alexander technique, Traeger, Feldenkrais, bioenergetic analysis, chakra balancing, Reiki, kinesiology, and the list goes on and on. Then, while pursuing my doctoral degree, I discovered the work of Dr. Margaret Mahler, a prominent psychologist who had worked directly observing mothers and infants as they bonded. That led me to my doctoral dissertation about three emotional qualities left over from less than adequate bonding. These qualities could create havoc in relationships, separation anxiety, intense ambivalence, and anxiety about marriage or anxiety and fear about being merged with another person, being swallowed up by someone overtaking your life. And I discovered that I had all three of those qualities or fears or anxieties. When I first met my teacher and mentor, Alana Rubinfeld, I felt as though I had come home. Her elegant work, the Rubinfeld Synergy Method, provided the missing link that I had not understood. The mind and body do not operate as separate, distinct units. Our body does not move on its own accord. A dead body does not lift its arms or legs. A dead body does not move from one place to another, or I certainly hope I never see one that does. So what does make our body move? The answer is our brain. our brain connects our mind and our body. Our body does not have a mind of its own. Our body responds to the messages received from our brain. We continually receive stimulation from sources outside of our body and also inside our body, but our body only responds after the sensory nerves bring those messages to our brain for interpretation and appropriate response. Our brain is our largest love organ, our largest sex organ, and our largest healing organ. What does healing your relationship to yourself have to do with healing through love? Everything. It is impossible to love anyone else if you do not first love yourself. You can't forgive others until you have felt and allowed your own emotions, your own hurt, resentment, disappointment, joy and anger, your own rage, and even your own selfishness, inconsiderateness, or whatever you deem unpleasant qualities. You cannot forgive another until you are able to forgive yourself for being less than perfect or less than your own ideal. If you have ever flown in an airplane, one of the first instructions you will receive is to put your own oxygen mask on first before assisting others. Know yourself, help yourself, love yourself first before attempting to love and care for others. So simple, yet often so difficult. We begin the healing process with a simple yet profound question. Who are you? Who are you? Now, sit in a comfortable position. Uncross your arms and legs. Feel your feet on the floor. Take three slow, deep, easy, and quiet breaths. Close your eyes and allow your body to relax. Now take three slow, deep, easy, and quiet breaths. Inhale and exhale. Inhale and exhale. And one more. Inhale and exhale. When I ask each question, respond in your mind, in the first person, by saying, I am. For example, when I ask the first question, who am I? My answer might be, I am a woman, I am an educator, I am a teleseminar leader, I am a teacher, I am a friend. When I ask again, who am I? I might say, I am creative, I am sensitive, I am successful. When you hear the question, respond with your immediate response. Accept whatever answers come to you, and do not edit or change the answers. Listen to your mind's first responses, the most correct response at any given moment. And now, answer the following questions. Allow the first response or responses to enter your mind. Who am I? Your response is, I am, and you finish the sentence. Who am I? am I? Who am I? What are other people here for in my life? Why am I alive now, right now, at this time? What is my purpose in this life? What is my purpose in life? What do I believe about love? Is joyful, abundant love possible for me? Who do I enjoy touching or holding? Or does something stop me from wanting to touch or hold someone or anyone? Are there any messages that my body is giving me right now? Is my body telling me something about my life, about the way I'm handling some situation, about a particular person or circumstance? What yearns to heal inside of me? What does sexual reawakening mean to me? And what part or role does a higher power or spirituality or God play in my life? These are only some of the many important questions to ask yourself, but not just once, to really ask yourself and find out what is true for you in your life. And before talking about love, I have an important question for you to think about. What is your body telling you about yourself, about your life, and about the way you love? Your body believes you. Tell it what you want it to hear. Your body speaks the truth. Listen to its wisdom. Your body is your temple. Honor it. Sanctify it. Love it. You and your body are one. Treat it as your beloved companion. It is yours for life. Listen to your body. Your Your body listens to every thought you have, every word you speak, and your body believes you. Your body speaks to you in body messages, in sensations, pleasant and unpleasant, in injuries, in discomforts, in all sorts of aches and pains, and then in diseases and illnesses. Pay attention. Listen to the subtle messages your body is offering you, moment to moment. If you ignore these body messages, a knot in your stomach, a stubbed toe, an ache in your neck or your shoulders, you may be surprised that these signals can intensify. And you find you've developed something much bigger, like a full-blown indigestion, a broken toe, a whiplash, a shoulder injury. Your body sends you messages all the time. Physical symptoms are often a warning from your subconscious, reminding you to pay attention to your body or to some person, some situation, or a life event. I actually fell down the stairs when we were living in a home in Connecticut. I had walked out. I thought I was walking into my husband's room, and I walked out into the staircase. It was dark, it was nighttime, and I tumbled down. And luckily there were some blinds at the bottom, a window at the bottom with blinds, and I didn't really damage myself. I didn't break anything. I sat up, I went upstairs, I got some aspirin, and I put the phone and some water right near the bed. I didn't know whether I was really injured. And a few days later, I spoke to somebody who said these words, and they just stayed with me. She said, "You were bruised, but not broken." And I had felt that so much in my relationships, in my business dealings, and in my life. It was a strong message, and I must have received it sooner, but I needed a really strong message for the point to hit home. And that I didn't have to be afraid to fall because I could pick myself up and move on. I didn't have to be afraid of failure. So what kind of messages are you finding in your body that maybe you're not paying attention to? For example, watch it, my heart is hurting from that person's remarks. Or look at that, I really can't stomach my work. Your stomach is all churning and upset. Or I have no support. My back is up against the wall and you're having back spasms. Research with patients who display dissociative identity disorder, formerly called multiple personality disorder, have verified the power of our mind in our own illness. One personality could have all the symptoms of a disease, such as diabetes or skin rashes, while another personality would emerge and the doctors found absolutely no signs of that same illness through blood tests and medical workups in the very same person's body. When decoding the meaning behind a physical symptom in your body, always search for the physical causes first. Sometimes the cause is hereditary or genetic. Sometimes an injury is just that, an injury, or an infectious disease is just that, an infectious disease. After examining and exhausting the possible physical causes, then begin to look for possible emotional causes, beliefs, and meanings in your own life. Examine your words, your verbal communication with and about your body. Your body speaks your mind. Is something in your life eating away at you? Is something lying heavy in your gut? Are you unable to digest the meaning of an experience? Use your words, your speech, as a guide to your own unconscious. Pay attention to the words you use to describe your life and the sensations and symptoms in your body. Your underlying beliefs will become clear, and you may be amazed. Your words may match a symptom exactly. Before focusing on love, I would like you to ask yourself one more time, what is your body telling you about yourself, your life, and how you love or are being loved? Love is a gift given to us by our Creator. We do not have to work to become worthy of love. We are love. Our spirit is pure love. No matter what the circumstances of our birth, God or the universal forces intended us to be here. Otherwise, we would not exist. A wonderful poster I have seen says, "God don't make no mistakes. Believe it." The following poem describes how some people actually feel about love. The poignant desire to be love, but the sense that I am not really worthy and deserving of love, but wanting and craving love anyway. Love me, please. Love me, please. I don't deserve it. Love me, please. I don't know how. Love me, please. You don't fit my pictures. Love me, please. When I was 20, in my senior year of college, my father, Morris, had a stroke, became progressively more ill, and passed away. All I wanted to do was run away, to escape from feeling the sadness, confusion, the fear, and the loss. 28 years later, when my mother was dying, I stayed by her side, day and night, throughout her last few days. All I felt was the enduring quality of love and the loss of this precious human life, my mother, Muriel. We don't need to wait for devastating loss or impending death to feel the love that has always been inside of us. Regardless of the loss or pain we have endured, in every moment of our life, we can choose to close our heart or open our heart to love. The question is, how? A wonderful author and speaker, Leo Biscaglia, many years ago, told a story about a very sad, lonely woman. The story goes something like this. A woman wrote him a letter explaining that she was very lonely, sad, and depressed. In her letter to him, she explained that over the years she had been so very disappointed in people that she has let go of all of her friendships. At this point, she had nobody in her life to make her feel unhappy, to upset her, to get her angry, to confuse or aggravate her. And she wanted his advice on how to get over feeling lonely, sad, and depressed. Leo Biscaglia reminded the audience that it was true. This lady no longer had anybody disappointing, hurting, or upsetting her. However, he added, this sad lady also had nobody to laugh with, to play with, to have fun with, to console and comfort her, to praise and acknowledge her, or just to accept her. And most of all, she had nobody that she could love and nobody who was loving her. A prominent medical doctor, Dr. Dean Ornish, wrote a book in the 1990s called Love and Survival. He said in that book that without love, connection, and intimacy, we are more likely to suffer and become ill. Without love, we just do not thrive. Without love, we seem to just go through the motions of daily life, devoid of pleasure and excitement. Although love creates the most profound feelings of peace and joy, most of us have not learned how to truly love ourselves or anyone else. Relationships often become a place to suffer. And whether you want to believe it or not, that suffering begins with us, not with the other person. Of course, there are people we can become intimate with who have some very real, deep psychological problems, anger, rage, depression, anxiety, emotional imbalances, chemical or other addictions, or maybe they have some very real physical problems that can interfere with the enjoyment of the time we share together. But if you look around the world and observe others around you, you may discover that there are many other people living with very similar circumstances, living with someone else's rage and depression or anxiety, living with someone else's illness and caring for them, and handling it and coping much differently than you are. Other people may have a higher or lower tolerance for pain or discomfort, a greater or lesser ability to accept human frailty, and a stronger or weaker sense of their own self-worth, regardless of the attitudes and behaviors of those they are closest to. Some people will bail out as soon as the going gets a little difficult. Others might remain loyal and connected way longer than what is beneficial to both partners. None of us can truly judge another person's life choices. It is up to each and every one of us to find our own truth and to live that truth to the best of our ability. Each and every one of us is completely unique with our own specialized DNA, our own footprint and fingerprint, our own synapses in our brain, and different memories, different upbringing, different dreams and hopes. The following quote by American Indian Cho Quash explains the difference. Soldiers act on others' truth. Warriors stand alone and find their own truth. My question to you is this. In terms of your own self-worth, choice of friendships and lovers, and connection with an intimate life partner, are you a soldier or a warrior? Are you living your life and making choices that ultimately affect you based upon your own cultural teachings, your parents' beliefs, your religious training, peer pressure, extended family warnings, images in the media? Or are you making choices for yourself that enhance your own sense of self-worth, self-acknowledgement, self-acceptance, self-appreciation, and self-love? Are you making choices that enhance and bring out your passion and your own sensual aliveness? Are you making choices that expand your comfort zone, push you past your small area of comfort, and increase your sense of spiritual connection? David Schnarch, Ph.D., wrote a powerful book in the 1990s about relationships called Passionate Marriage. He devotes an entire chapter to the warning concept, intimacy is not for the faint of heart. According to Schnarch, intimacy in long-term marriage may require validating ourself rather than expecting to receive the mirroring, acceptance, and validation we are longing for from our partner. How we have been loved has a profound effect upon our ability to validate ourselves and share our love with others. getting back to my doctoral dissertation and Dr. Margaret Mahler's theory of the lifelong effects of mother-infant bonding, the first stage in this developing process is symbiosis. Here, the infant does not know the difference between self and mother. Then, from about the 5th month until 3 years of age, a process known as separation individuation occurs. The final phase of this amazing life process is the development of individuality and object constancy, the ability to accept both the good and bad qualities in oneself, one's mother, father, and others. Without a clear sense of individuality, and without the ability to retain a constant sense of the other person, we will alternate between closeness and distance, loving and appreciating, and then disliking and denigrating, inevitably creating emotional ups and downs with our most intimate partners. If we have had good enough mothering, a term coined by noted psychologist Winnicott, as well as good enough fathering, we may be able to overcome our dependency needs, differentiate from our intimate partners, and validate our own self, even and especially when our partner is not only not validating us, but is actually criticizing, blaming, and invalidating us, which is bound to happen in any close relationship at certain points. People have events and other people affecting them in their life, and they are not always at a high level of loving and caring that we wish we all could be and have in our life. If we have not received good enough loving as a child, we will probably spend the rest of our life searching for the love and acceptance we never actually experienced. Because we have not learned to trust, we will probably tend to push others away, keeping them at a safe distance, afraid to show how much we need them, or maybe pushing them even when they are trustworthy, feeling that they're not trustworthy, testing them, questioning them, and maybe even pushing them to destroy our trust in some way. It's hard for even the most caring and patient partner to continually support someone who distrusts and feels unloved. Find out more about your own ability to love and perhaps what areas of your life could use some healing. Take a short quiz at createhealingandlovenow.com. Get your results, and you will receive lots of free bonuses that help you jumpstart your love life. Even if we have had very poor mothering and fathering, painful, neglectful, or downright abusive beginnings, we do have the ability to overcome our past, create new pathways in our brain, differentiate as adults, and create intimacy in our life. Intense therapeutic work and powerfully intimate love relationships can assist us to overcome early childhood deficiencies, but nothing can totally erase what has happened or not happened in our life. The memories remain. We have to allow ourselves to feel and express all of our emotions, even the most painful, to reach a point of being able to accept the truth about what is. One of my favorite sayings in regard to this is, the only way out is through. The only way to get past heavy, negative emotions is to allow yourself to truly and honestly feel and express all of your emotions, both positive, neutral, and negative. Now, ask yourself the following questions. Have I had good enough mothering and good enough fathering from my biological parents, step-parents, adoptive parents, or other adults when I was a young child and developing. Do I have unmet emotional needs from my early parenting experiences that now cause me problems in my intimate relationships? These are two very important questions for you to think about, and think about it over time. In what ways was my parenting from my mother and father, or whoever took the role of mother and father for me, was it good enough parenting? Or did I have some real unmet emotional needs that have still not been met? And what are my nurturing needs? Sit quietly, close your eyes, breathe deeply and slowly, and allow your body to relax. Take a moment to think about your most significant relationships, past, present. Think of a few relationships and think about your own patterns in terms of nurturing. Do you tend to nurture and validate yourself? Do you tend to nurture and validate others? In your mind, ask yourself the following questions and listen carefully to the answers that come without judging or censoring. In my relationships, in what way do I tend to ignore my own needs to please others? In what ways do I make unfair demands on others to please myself? And how do I give more than my share so the other person will need me and not leave? In what ways do I attempt to keep others off balance and disempowered by controlling them with words, money, or by being unpredictable and erratic? How do I allow others to control, unbalance, and disempower me? Do I sometimes or often refuse to give to others what they express that they want and desire, that they ask for or say that they need? Do I often allow others to deny me what I desire and ask for and say that I need? Do I usually express my feelings? And do I ask for what I want in the moment? Do I allow others to express their feelings as they are? And do I allow them to ask for what they want? Do I often blame others and not take responsibility and refuse to be accountable? Reflect upon your responses to the questions I have just asked and decide now. How have my attitudes and behaviors affected my relationship to myself? Is this the way I want to be with others? Is there something more I can do to nurture and validate myself? Is there a way I can communicate my needs more effectively to others so that I can really get what I want and have them feel as though they're also getting what they want? Can I allow others to express their needs without suppressing my own needs? Learning how to love can be difficult. We have to give up the narcissistic belief that we are entitled to immediate gratification of our own needs at the expense of others. We have to let go of our desire to control people and situations. Love involves more than giving and receiving. When we love, we allow others to exist. We allow others to be themselves, to strive for their own goals, even if their goals sometimes directly interfere with our own needs and desires. Research at the Institute of Heart Math indicates that our heart has an intricate electrochemical circuitry that connects directly with our brain. When we feel upsetting emotions, our heart rhythms become uneven and send jumbled information. We're unable to think clearly. Feeling love, we can literally activate coherent heart rhythms and send coherent messages to our brain, leading to emotional well-being and mental clarity. When we love, there is a rippling effect. Each person who receives our love has more love energy to share with others. Imagine what a world this would be if everyone loved freely, instead of reserving it for only a precious few people that we value in our family or among our friends. Most of us misunderstand love. We believe that love means loving others regardless of the effect upon ourselves, or we believe we must love ourselves at the expense of others. Love often requires strength, discipline, and making appropriate choices. Homework for this week is to go to the following three sites. First, go to createhealingandlovenow.com and take the quiz. Get your results and start getting all those wonderful, continual, free bonuses and messages that will help you to jumpstart your love life. Next, go to throughlove.com, THROUGH, throughlove.com, to get your free report, 7 Critical Mistakes People Make When Looking for Love. This will prepare you for the next module. Third, if you feel ready and so inclined, you can get a copy of one of my books. The first one would be good to start with, Love Me Please, but you could get the complete book or any one of them. Love Me Please, Touch Me Please, Heal Me Please, or Sexual and Spiritual Reawakening. The websites for that are http://budurl.com/mylulustore, Lulu is spelled L-U-L-U, or http://budurl.com/love-touch-heal-ebook. It was a pleasure for me to speak with you today about healing your relationship to yourself. Someone once said that when you are about to die, you will not be concerned with the cars you drove, the jewelry you acquired, or even the great accomplishments you achieved. What you will want to know is 3 things. How have I loved? How have I loved others? And have I fulfilled my life's purpose? Nobody else can live your life for you. Only you can take the actions that will lead to a happy response to those three questions. Take the quiz, read the Seven Mistakes report, and get one of my books. And then you will be ready for our next session, Module 2, Healing Your Relationship to Others. Please spend this week contemplating how you have loved, how you have been loved, and how you want to be loved.